straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first, On Second Thought.
On Second Thought, episode 269, brought to you by Hook'em.com, our good friends at Bud Light. Cedric Golden here with the Duck, Kirk Bowles, historic podcast today. My guy, CBS Austin sports director, Bobalu, I call him Bobby B, is joining us to talk everything Texas football. We're going to ask him about a certain prediction he made, but in front of his 6 million viewers. Bob, what's up?
6 million, huh? I don't know where you got that. I thought it was way more than that. This is a true honor to be on with you guys. You guys know how much I love you and everything you guys do here in Austin and what you do for this community, what you do in the sports world, but outside it too. So this is really special for me to get to do this with you guys.
Bob, you're such a big guy. You've been so entrenched in this market. Why the hell are you not in New York or Chicago or LA?
You know, I've never really pursued that. When I got into this business, I really wanted to be somewhere that was a cool city with great sports to cover. And that was pretty much my goal. And when I got here, I think the only place I really ever wanted to go outside of here was Dallas, just because I'm from there. I grew up there. Cowboys, Rangers, Mavericks, Stars were always my four favorite teams. You know, Fox Sports Southwest at the time, or now Bally Sports Southwest, ESPN were always, I always thought about that stuff, but you know, I didn't want to live in Connecticut. That was, you know, for ESPN, that was a big part of it too.
Who does?
It's, you know, I mean, it's this place, this city, everything about it, single or married is just a fantastic place to live. And I just love being here.
You know, you talked about living in a great city and covering great sports. And why did you leave San Antonio? I mean, that was a spot. That was a spot, and it was a lot cheaper.
Yeah, there were some contractual issues that came up at the time.
Very nice.
Some things that I wasn't exactly pleased with, and I loved my time in San Antonio, don't get me wrong. But I actually just kind of took a chance. I took a chance on myself and said I didn't have a job lined up. I just said at the time, I feel like I can do more. And when I told them of my decision, probably 2 weeks later, this opportunity popped up in Austin. And I was fortunate enough to, you know, come down and interview, and had a tremendous interview at the time. And they wanted to move fast with it. And it just happened to work out perfectly with my contract. So very blessed on that front, because I don't know where I'd be right now or what I would have done if this opportunity hadn't popped up.
Well, when did you know I want to be a sports anchor? I know you grew up in a market where Dale Hansen's kind of an institution, an icon. When did you know I want to do that? I want to be a sports anchor.
Yeah, you know, watching Dale growing up was my inspiration. That was my the guy that I looked to. I just remember watching him and thinking to myself, if you can do sports with that much joy and that much opinion, and that he was just doing it in a different way than anyone I'd ever seen do it. And I loved that. Scott Sams was the morning anchor at WFAA, and he was my Bible school teacher growing up. And he took us out to the station one day when I was probably 13. Mm-hmm. And I have a picture in I think it was a starter jacket or something, like sitting on the anchor desk. My mom still has it in a frame in her house, because she was like, this is the first time you were ever on set.
And it was
Scott Sams. And we took a tour, and I really liked it. But watching Dale was kind of my thing, where I went, you know, I probably could have played sports in college at a Division II or Division III level, soccer or basketball. But when I got down to it, I just said, it's time for me to move on. And when I came down to my parents went to Texas. I bled burnt orange growing up. I think I've missed like four OU games since like 1984. So, I mean, it's always been entrenched in me. But when I came down here to go to Texas, I just assumed I'd go to Texas. And when I came down here, someone there that day said to me, if you want to do sports, go to broadcast journalism, go to Missouri. And I was like, why would anyone want to go to Missouri for anything? That doesn't make any sense. And misery, right? That's what everybody says. But I went to Mizzou, had a great visit up there, ended up deciding to go to Missouri. And I spent 4 years in school there, 4 years after working at the NBC affiliate with the legendary Chris Gervino. And now I'm I went on to San Antonio after that, but Columbia was great. It was just a great town, and it worked out for me that Mizzou was the place to go.
Here's the thing. I grew up in Tyler, and I grew up on Dale Hansen just like you did. WFAA, Dale Hansen, Jerry Orr, Vern Lundquist before. We wanted you on this show because, Bob, you're the only sports director in Austin who gives opinion from time to time. And Kirk and I pay our bills by giving opinion. You know that not everybody is going to agree with an opinion. So how big an influence was Dale on you? Because I was a Dale Hansen, Randy Galloway guy. Yeah. I read Galloway. I watched Dale. That was my body. Those were my OGs. And so how important was that for you? Because you could have played it straight with your jobs and not done any commentary and been popular. But when you do commentary, you run that risk. So how important was that? And how much did you take that into consideration that not everybody's going to like what you have to say?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I think I probably touched on it a little bit in Columbia, but I was 23, 24, 25. And you can't really, you don't have enough, you know.
You ain't grown up yet.
Yeah, exactly. And even in San Antonio a little bit, but even there, it was still kind of more surface. I didn't go deep on a lot of stuff. And when I got here, I probably didn't do it when I started. I think one of the things you really need to do in a market is establish yourself and not, I don't like coming in, you know, blazing saddles, just guns up, like, let's just throw everything out.
That's how you get run out of town.
Absolutely. I think you need to know the market before you can do that. And I remember one of the first commentaries I did that really got a lot of blowback, and it was funny who the blowback was from, but it was when, you remember when Brittany Griner punched Joy Barncastle in Lubbock, and Kim Mulkey suspended her for the final regular season game of the year and the first game of the Big 12 tournament, which neither game mattered to Baylor because they were going to be a number one seed or number two seed. And I basically went off on Kim Mulkey for the suspension. Certainly on Brittany a little bit for what she did. I think she was a freshman at the time, but more so for what Kim did in not suspending her longer, suspending her for the postseason or whatever it was to set the example. And I mean, the blowback from Baylor fans was crazy. They were, you know, very unhappy. And I don't limit, I want you to know, I'm just bringing this particular one up because it's the first one I really remember. You can't go one way and not the other. You can't blast Baylor and not blast Texans. You can't blast the Cowboys, but not blast the Texans. I mean, you gotta be able to be a reasonable journalist through all of this too, and not have any biases. And so I feel like I've done that, but I remember that one specifically just because of the number of calls and the number of emails. And I kind of felt like it was that moment of, okay, I've established myself here where there are enough people that care about what I say that they want to come after me. They want to have their opinions felt. And there were other people that went the other way too. Like, thank you for saying it. Greg Hardy was another big one. Urban Meyer was another big one. I mean, there's some like that really stick out to me, but you're right. The influence of Dale Hansen and watching what he did. And I don't get into politics like he did later in his career. I haven't done that as much. But I think it's important. Number one, because sports is sports. This is, in the end, for the most part, not that serious. Now the Greg Hardy, Urban Meyer situation, certainly different, but for the most part, if you're going to give an opinion on something, you need to have the knowledge, have the people behind you to back you up. So first and foremost, for CBS Austin to allow me to do that is fantastic. I mean, I don't have management say it's okay for you to give that opinion, I think is enormous. But then behind that, to have people that you know at certain spots to be able to give that opinion with something to back it up. You know, you've got to have sources, you've got to have people you trust to talk through some of that stuff too. And whether that's inside or outside of the actual situation itself. So I think that's been really important for me. I love doing it because sparking conversation in sports to me is very important. We have a journalistic ability to make a difference in communities, whether that's through charity, whether that's through commentating, whether that's through whatever it is we do. And I think it's vital that we use that platform when we can and when it's available.
And you obviously got the chops. Like you say, you've proven yourself in this market. You're a smart, knowledgeable guy. You don't go off. half cocked. And I'd like to ask you about just kind of any heat you get, any criticism. I mean, Cedric and I, we get hate mail. It comes in bulk mail. So, you know, we have to have a secretary.
We still get handwritten from little old ladies.
Yeah. Love it.
That's when we know we're doing our job. If you piss off some people and other people like it. I was curious as far as your relationship with coaches, anybody in UT administration, any stories or what you're feeling as far as, you know, getting blowback from coaches or administrators?
Yeah, I mean, not a ton. I mean, I think, and maybe you guys can attest to this too, but I think in the end, if you have a coach's respect, if you have an administration's respect for what you do, they understand you have a job to do too. And your job sometimes is digging into what they're doing. Your job sometimes is finding out, you know, the behind the scenes stuff that goes on at Texas or at other schools in the area. And I think they understand that for the most part. And the ones who don't, quite honestly, the ones who I've probably heard blowback from or seen blowback toward other people at our station or other places, don't end up staying around very long because I think they don't grasp what we do. Not that that's necessarily the reason they leave the job or they get fired from the job or whatever it is, but I think you have to understand it. And I think, you know, right now with the administration that's in place at Texas, I think the coaches that are there fully understand some of the criticisms that they get. I think Sark understands that going 5-7 probably isn't the best thing for his future. You know, I mean, I don't think that getting criticism for that is something that how could he not? You know what I mean? I mean, he knows that's coming. Same with Chris Del Conte. If there are things great, it's wonderful that they won the Director's Cup. They've won all these sports. I think in the end, you know that football has to be better. Football is your number one cash cow. It's the thing that makes everything run and it's got to be better. And so I think they get that. I really do. I think most administrations, even Austin FC to an extent, you look at what Austin FC did last year and how poor they played. I think they understood we've got to be better, especially if we're going to get this town behind our team. And they took the steps to make the team better. Now they're, you know, second place in the MLS right now. So I think people get that. And I think when you do get blowback, when you get it from fans, you laugh it off, I think, for the most part. I think Twitter and written notes and the things you guys were talking about, I think that's fine. You don't mind a lot of that stuff. And to be honest, when I get blowback from a lot of people, I think when you respond to them, they're surprised.
Oh, yeah.
The people that attack you, they can't believe you're actually, like, either coming back at them or even just – I laugh a lot of it. Like, somebody the other day, my thing on Texas and I think they're going to win the Big 12 this year. A lot of Oklahoma fans came at me for that, though.
Let me set the table on that one. That's why we want you here.
So he buried the lead, man.
I'm watching CBS, Austin, because I tune in from 10:27 to 10:35 on weeknights to see Bobby B. And I see him on there saying, I'm an idiot. And I go, what? He's one of the smartest people I know. And then he goes, I think I'm an idiot because I think Texas is going to win the Big 12. And so right then and there, I'm like, Duck, we got to get Bob on.
That's a crazy prediction.
Duck does crazy predictions, but that one got my attention. Please explain yourself, sir.
Here's the thing. What had happened? No, listen, I just think this league is ripe for the taking this year. I think it starts there. I think the Big 12 is going through some changes at every program. Certainly Baylor, if you were just going to pick a team, it'd be Baylor or Oklahoma State, I think. I think that's what most people would say. That said, Oklahoma there's just something about it. This is not a knock on Brent Venables. It's not a knock on anything that's happening at Oklahoma. They'll still have good players. But I feel like they lost a lot of talent. And I feel like there have been some weird things that have happened with Brent Venables since he took over. And things that just make you go, is this going to take a minute for him to really get this under his belt and understand what's going on? Whether that's the case or not, again, who knows? But I looked at Texas and I said – first and foremost, and I, people laughed at me for this one, but there's elite talent on offense. That's very obvious. Bijan and Xavier are obviously. Quinn Ewers is coming in. Sure, he hasn't played, but it's kind of the same thing with the offensive line. Like if the, those two things can really kind of mesh, I think that offense can be really good. What I said was, if you looked at Rice, Tech, TCU, and the first half of Oklahoma last year, I know those defenses weren't the best defenses in the world. TCU, fairly good. But that's what Steve Sarkisian's offense can be. And I think that, to me, was the most important thing offensively, was you looked at the way that offense clicked there. And before Casey Thompson hurt his thumb, all those things. I know maybe it gets worse, maybe it doesn't. Who knows? But the way that offense clicked, to me, was what Steve Sarkisian believes this offense can be every year at Texas. So if you get that going, I looked at the defense and I said, okay, Pete Kwiatkowski was really bad in year one at Washington, then got better and better and better. But he's got a little help over his shoulder now. Gary Patterson knows this league better than anybody else. Maybe Mike Gundy, but Gary Patterson, top to bottom, knows this league better than anyone. Knows the defenses, how defenses should play in this league. And I just felt like when you combine all of those things together, Texas will have an opportunity to win the league this year. I don't think it's crazy outlandish because of the way this league is structured this year, because some of the teams that may be a little down, because I don't trust Spencer Sanders.
I don't either.
I never have. Watching him another year, I don't know that that's going to change anything. You know, obviously Baylor was really good last year and they will probably be very good this year. Texas gets them at home. I just think there are opportunities for Texas to take that next step. They were so close in so many games last year. And I don't know. I just think it's going to happen. I wasn't doing it as a ha ha, here's a joke, you know, whatever. Like, I fully do believe
we're going to win this.
The Big 12. I do mean it. And but the bigger part is, and this may take some investigative research on y'all's part, can we find the other idiot? Because there were two media members that voted Texas number one, and I know I'm one of them, but I don't know who the other one is. So I'm hoping at some point he or she will come out.
Actually, there's actually three. A coach voted.
Yeah, that's right.
And he hasn't come forth either.
Who was that? I mean, who do we think that was? I had a list of three people. I thought it Saban didn't – maybe Saban, but that didn't make a lot of sense.
That's my guy.
Yeah, but I mean, does he really need to motivate his – oh, look, this team got a number one vote? I don't think they care about that. Stan Drayton at Temple, maybe. And I don't know who has votes either. This is the other thing when I was naming names. But Stan Drayton.
Does Tractor Trailer has a vote?
UTSA. He didn't vote. But his people told me he wasn't the one.
Okay, and then Spav. I mean, he said he had him high. He didn't say how high. That was the only other one.
He kind of dodged the question. One person also, Joey McGuire at Tech, I was told he wasn't the one that voted number one. Stan Drayton's people at Temple didn't get back to me. Neither did Sonny Dykes at SMU.
Another one, yeah.
I think that person typed in Texas and just forgot the A&M part.
I will say this. Whoever the other two people are, if Texas wins the Big 12 or wins the national championship, you'll hear from them. I promise.
Hey, you're right, Bob. You're right. Let's talk about these quarterbacks. Very unorthodox announcement from Sark through John Bianco that it's going to be Quinn Ewers. And before we dive into that, let's hear what he said when Kirk asked him about the decision.
So how was Quinn better than Hudson?
You know, Quinn can make all the throws. I feel very comfortable about that. I feel comfortable about his playmaking ability. I feel like his growth in the system has been one where we can really kind of see where it's going to head under him, and I'm excited about it.
He makes all the throws. He's got talent. He does have Hudson Card on his leadership council. That's an interesting dynamic, but Quinn Ewers isn't. So what did you think of the decision, Bob? Were you surprised? I wasn't. We've been saying Quinn Ewers all since the spring, but were you surprised at the decision? And were you surprised he made it so early?
So I went back and looked at my scripts, actually, in my shows to make sure I got the dates right. December 12th, I believe, was the day Quinn Ewers committed to Texas. I wrote, "You don't bring Quinn Ewers to Texas to sit him on the bench." No, and don't. Then April 17th, I wrote, "I don't believe you bring Quinn Ewers to Texas to sit him on the bench." And I'm going to keep saying that until he starts and takes the first snap September 3rd against Louisiana Monroe. So I was never surprised. And quite honestly, with some of the reports that started coming out about how Hudson had taken the lead and it might be Hudson's job and they might name Hudson and all that stuff, it almost kind of reassured me in a sense, because if you want to do anything as a coach or as a source or whatever it is, you want to send smoke signals the wrong way. And that's always a fun part of the sourcing game and what a lot of people go through. I didn't mind the way he announced it either. I think there were some people maybe a little frustrated by it, but he knew it was going to come out and it was going to either leak out through a media member at some point, or he could just come down and tell us all. And so I didn't mind that either. I was not surprised. I just think a little bit like last year now, and I don't want to diminish. I'll come back to this. I don't want to diminish it. So I'll come back to that part. A little bit like last year when you had Hudson and Casey and you had two guys who in practice, in scrimmages, looked fairly even, or you felt like they were fairly even. You feel like you need to give the ball to the younger guy who has 4 years left and can, if he's that good, can develop into your guy. And all of a sudden Hudson Card's a freshman All-American and Texas goes to the Big 12 championship game or whatever it is. And you see the potential in him. In a little bit similar way, if they really felt like Quinn and Hudson were equals or close to it, you go with Quinn Ewers. He's the guy that's had the perfect recruiting rating. He's the guy with all the hype. He's the guy that can lead you to for the next 2 years before he maybe turns pro.
Younger.
That, you look at that stuff, right? That said, what I say I don't want to diminish the fact that Quinn Ewers won this job, that it was not handed to him on December 12th. It was not handed to him when he came in January. It wasn't handed to him in spring practice. That whatever the coaches asked, whatever happened in this situation, Quinn Ewers won the starting quarterback job. It was not handed to him. And I think that's a very important distinction, especially when you're trying to establish a culture in a program. Because if in practice, Hudson Card is outplaying Quinn Ewers every single day and they decide to start Quinn Ewers, that creates, to me, somewhat of a fraction in the locker room because everyone goes, well, I'm not outplaying this other guy. Why aren't I starting?
Right.
So you have to win the job. And I feel like Quinn Ewers had to have done that in some ways to at least continue to establish the culture that Sark wants to establish.
Yeah, the worst thing you can do is play favorites, obviously, especially at a position that important. I guess we were a little surprised when John Bianco, the PR guy, told us after interviews with the players on Friday, he said, oh, by the way, Quinn Ewers is the guy. And we're all thinking, oh, ha-ha, very funny. He said, no, I'm serious. So then we all tweeted out. And we since learned that he told both quarterbacks after Friday's practice privately, didn't tell the team, didn't announce it to the team, because partly the scrimmage the next day, you know, he figured Quinn's taking most, if not all, the number one reps with the number one team. So that's going to leak out. So, we all know how coaches hate it when stuff leaks out. They want to control the narrative. One thing I'd like to
Kirk, on that point, I think that was really important too. I really do think that part of it is important, that he was able to privately tell the quarterbacks first, that then the team could know, so that it wasn't this, a source somewhere said it was Quinn, now it's Quinn, and then he has to go tell them, guys, he got to tell them specifically, guys, here's the decision I've made and our staff has made, let's move forward.
So what do you two think of the repercussions as far as this goes? Because if he'd have gone with Hudson Card a second time and say he fizzled early, like, oh my God, what are you doing? You're repeating history. And if you do the freshman Quinn Ewers guy, basically a true freshman, it should be a true freshman in college right now, since you skipped your senior year in high school. So, you know, how big is this risk? How big is it a gamble that he either needed to win the Big 12 or be pretty damn good so they have a good year and go to a bowl game?
Well, what the message is sent to me, guys, is I think Sark sees the upside of Quinn Ewers and the lack of upside for Hudson Card. Hudson Card, this is his third year on campus. And you won that job and you had it for a hot minute and you didn't get it back. And so I think he believes that he can take this particular quarterback and win some games right now and next year as Arch serves his apprenticeship or blows us away and wins the job from Quinn Ewers. So I'm glad you brought that up, because what it does,
in my mind, it puts Hudson Card in decision-making mode.
Do I jump ship and transfer, or do I take inventory and graduate from the McCombs School, business school, get my degree, and stick around, because I'm from Lake Travis. I'm not poor. I'm not a poor kid. So I have options. And to that end, you know, I ask Sark about Hudson Card's mindset now that he knows he's the backup.
After Vince left, history of quarterback here, there have been really no Iron Man, with the exception of maybe Sam. Have you gotten that point across to Hudson that
alleviate some of that?
Steve, after Vince left, history of quarterback here, there have been really no Iron Man, with the exception of maybe Sam. Have you gotten that point across to Hudson that my quarterbacks get hurt in college football and he's got to be at the ready?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that's, you know, it goes without saying, but sometimes when you're put in that position and you're in a really contested battle and the other guy gets named the starter, you know, you can lose sight of potential opportunities and things that are in front of you. And we did make that point to Hudson and made that very clear. You know, Hudson's job is to compete still every day and to either make Quinn better or pass him. And I expect nothing less of Hudson to do that. But the reality of it is, playing quarterback in this day and age, it's hard to go through an entire season unscathed. And what, like I said, whether it's one play, one drive, one game, you know, two games, whatever that looks like, you've got to be prepared, because the worst thing that can happen to you is your number get called and you're not prepared. And that's one of the worst feelings. And so, but like I said, with Hudson, who he is as a person, what he's made up of, I expect nothing less for him to be prepared if his number gets called.
So staying at the ready, Bob, means, you know, they haven't had Iron Man here. Sammy played a lot of games, but Sammy got hurt. Cole played a lot of games, but Cole got hurt. David Ash just couldn't stay on the field. Vince Young is the only last real Iron Man they've had. So I believe, and Kirk and I spoke today on Wednesday at the Headliners Club in front of 200 people. We previewed the season with Ed Clemens. And I told them, they're both going to play this year. Hudson Card's going to get to play football this year because quarterbacks get hurt. But, Bob, do you think he has the maturity level to be ready like Casey Thompson was when his number is called?
Yeah, I think the most important thing that Sark said when we talked to him about the quarterbacks was that Quinn Ewers can make all the throws. And I thought that was most important because he did not say that about Hudson. And our good friend John High over at Fox.
Oh, wow.
Kind of went after Sark about that and said, you know, you're saying Quinn can make all the throws. Can Hudson not make all the throws? And Sark kind of avoided the question. Now,
well, don't put words in my mouth.
Yeah, he said, don't put words in my mouth.
John didn't.
He also didn't say Hudson can make all the throws. And I think that's so important.
Bobby had a chance. He had a chance. Yeah. To go, well, Hudson can make all the throws too, but he didn't.
And that's okay, though. Like, it's not – it would have been okay for Sark to say Hudson can't make every single throw he wanted to make. Everybody has a deficiency. It's not the end of the world when somebody has a deficiency. It's okay. But I, you know, even watching that open practice, it just seems like the ball comes out of Quinn's arm a little different. It's a little sharper. It's a little
heat. That's it.
And in this offense, it's predicated on hitting that deep ball. And Quinn seems so good at doing that. And we haven't seen enough. I don't know if he is or not. We'll see if he can do it in a game. That's where it's going to be most important. But at least right now, it seems that way. And I do think that's what was most important of all in all of this was they think Quinn gives them what they want in this offense, the quarterback, the elite potential of a quarterback in this offense. And I don't know that Hudson has the elite potential in this offense. And whether that ends up being the case or not, listen, if they go with Hudson and he beats Louisiana Monroe 38-17, and then they play Alabama and he just looks terrible. And then they've got to bring in Quinn late. It is, like you said, it's literally repeating history. Same thing as a year ago. And you start falling into the same traps as a year ago. So I think Sark made the right decision with Quinn Ewers for what he wants out of his offense and for the elite playmaking potential that Quinn brings to the table.
And here's the question, guys, too, is like, how short or long is that leash? And I would usually say a long leash, but when you go 5 and 7, that shortens the leash a little bit. If it is up and down, and he's mentioned growing pains he has all week, and he's going to have it. He hasn't thrown a pass in college, not one. You know, he's been on the field like maybe 2 snaps at Ohio State. So
if he
struggles, I'm thinking he won't wait too long where he goes to Hudson Card, because can Sark survive another 5 and 7 or 6 and 6 season?
I can't survive another 5 and 7. I don't even work. I'm not even a coach. But I'm going to tell you, it's different this year than it was last year.
It is.
Because the guy that was the backup last year lit up the Alamo Bowl and those Colorado Buffaloes for 4 touchdown passes and looked good doing it, which led us to think, he's going to be the starter. He had
I thought there was no doubt. I did too.
I thought that he was a quarterback's quarterback, lived in the film room, was the son of a quarterback. And so we were shocked when he got that job, when he didn't get
that. That was under Herman, remember?
Yeah. I know. Yeah.
Mark wasn't here
2 years ago. And so he knew what he was getting. Sark did, knew what he was getting. If I pull the plug on Hudson, I know I've got a guy who's made plays in a football game. Now, Hudson doesn't have that kind of skin on the wall. And so for me, I think that means the leash is going to be longer for Quinn Ewers.
And I don't know that when you talk about a leash, I mean, you think about they're going to play Louisiana Monroe. It should
they're
be
both going to play. Fairly, in that you know, game.
But I don't know that they will. I mean, they will if it's a blowout, but I just mean Hudson's not going to play the third series. Hudson's not going to play the sixth series. It'll be late.
Second half.
And then they're going to play Alabama and probably get beat. Who knows? But they're probably going to get beat by Alabama. And then they play UTSA, who's obviously much better. Maybe that's a trap game, whatever you want to call it. But I think that 2 of the first 3 games are going to give Quinn enough experience of successful football that leash will be extended even a little longer, just because it won't be as hard for him to be successful in 2 of those 3 games. Mm-hmm. And now, again, if he comes out against Alabama and throws 4 picks or 5 picks on the first 5 or 6 series, we're looking at something different. But I just think if you're looking at this from a long-term base, I think Sark will give Quinn every chance in the world to get better, to improve over the first 5, 6 games. And then we'll kind of reevaluate at some point after that.
So what do you think the keys? We exhausted the quarterback situation. Is there 1 or 2 keys for you, Bob, that this season kind of hinges on?
Yeah, and I want to say one thing about the quarterback, and I'll move on from it, I promise. I think at some point, maybe not this year, but at some point, Malik Murphy will play an important role in this program. I just want that
really?
Out.
Really? Explain what that.
I think maybe it's as a backup, and then he comes in or whatever it is. I think Malik Murphy is going to be an important role in this program at some point. When that is, I don't know. Maybe it's next year, but yeah. I think he's talented enough to make that happen. The 2 keys for me this year, I think they've got to be better defensively. There has to be more cohesion back there. I think it's going to be hard for there not to be as poor as last year was. But I think for Pete Kwiatkowski to take a step with that defense, they don't need to be a top 10 defense. If they can be a top 50 defense, that will be a marked improvement from last year. And I think that's enough for this team to be special. And then I just think it's avoiding the injury bug. I think Bijan needs to stay healthy. I think Roshan, I think Xavier, the talent, Jordan Whittington, the guys on offense that will make or break this year. Kelvin Banks needs to stay healthy.
There you go.
If I'm going to name 5 guys on offense that need to stay healthy,
that's them.
That's them. You know, they've already lost 2 starters in Isaiah Nayor and Junior Ongalau. You can't keep losing starters. The depth isn't here yet. It's coming. You can see it. You can see the freshman coming in, but it's not here yet. And he's got to have that depth to build the program. And so these guys can't keep getting hurt. You've got to have your starters that are experienced at least be able to kind of hold the line for a little bit for this team to be successful this year.
Offensive line is mine. Number 1. Keep that young quarterback safe and open up enough holes that they don't have to run Bijan Robinson into the ground. That's big. Kelvin Banks, wow, you hit on him. He's a grown-ass man already. Love him. Love the look. That number 100th defense, you got to be 65th, 68th.
That's the thing. It doesn't have to be incredible, right?
You gave up 425 a game. If you give up 380, 390, you're going to win eight games. Mm-hmm. You're going to win eight games if you give up 380 or 390. 380 to 390 is top three or four in the Big 12. You got to do that. And so my biggest concern is the defense. Those old dudes up front got to play up to their age. Snacks Colburn, Devondre Sweat, Moro Ojomo, Vernon Broughton, those guys, Alfred Collins, that's the old crew. They gotta play old if they're gonna be old. And we're past time for potential. Remember how we were talking about, oh man, these guys are gonna be great when they're older. Okay, we're here. What are you gonna do? And they need to help carry this load early in the season while this kid gets his sea legs at quarterback, or else they're gonna be in trouble. Duck.
Is there a big game? Obviously OU and Alabama. Is there any game on the schedule? Or either one of you, I worry a little bit about the Texas Tech game, game four. You know, it's a couple games after Alabama. We talked to the headliners how they can't get beat up in that game and lose more starters. But, you know, I wonder if they might sleepwalk going out to Lubbock. Put what did they hang, 70 on them last year?
70 got a new 35. Coach. Yeah.
You know, so I worry about because crazy stuff happens in Lubbock. How about you guys? Is there another game besides Alabama and OU that kind of has you concerned for the Longhorns?
Stillwater,
always. Well, they won like 8 out of 12.
Stillwater. You
know, Cowboys said.
I guess y'all just aren't going to say Lawrence. They haven't beaten Kansas in 1,000 days, so.
Too soon.
Too soon, Bob.
How about that, though? I didn't even process it. They really haven't beaten Kansas in like 900 days or whatever the number is because it was canceled in 2020, and then they beat them in 2019. I think they've got to beat Baylor at home. I think that's the one for me that they have to win that game if they're gonna get themselves a chance for the Big 12 title.
They have to
win that game.
So you got them winning the Big 12. Are you talking 10-2 here? 11-1?
I think 9-3 is enough. I think they're gonna lose to Alabama most likely, and that puts them at a 2-loss conference schedule. And as we've seen over the last few years in this conference, 2 losses
that gets
not
you in.
Necessarily, but it probably gets you into the title game. And so I think they can lose 2 and still get in.
This might be the year, right, a 2-loss team gets in that championship game.
Oh, right. Yeah, into the playoff?
Yeah.
Playoff, you never know.
Who's your national champion, Bob?
Alabama, because how can you ever pick against them?
I am.
Whatever happens to Ohio State.
I pick Alabama too, Bobby B.
Just until they lose. Or Georgia, Alabama. Whatever. Whichever one you want to pick, but Alabama.
Alabama over Ohio State for the championship. Alabama. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so it's going to be the second time in like 3 seasons that the national champion is going to play at DKR. The problem is it's not Texas. That's the problem.
It's just crazy that Alabama and Texas are going to play twice this year. That's just going to be nuts. it's crazy.
Absolutely, I hope so. I hope you're right.
And Bob, when do you have Texas and OU in the SEC?
I don't know, like 2030 now, the way this thing keeps going. I thought it would be this year. When this whole thing came down last summer, I was like, this will be a year and they'll be done. This will be quick. Everything's quick now. When something happens, it's over. Like, that's it. And we just move on. And then with OU not willing to pay the money to get out, I think it's going to be until the contract's up. So I think 2025.
God, I hope not. I hope not. I'm hoping one more year in the Big 12 after next year.
I may be dead by then. I just hope not. But before we go, Bob, we run out of time here. You do a great thing every year. That you just had the 8th year of the Under Blue Skies Golf Classic and Party. Big time golf tournament that raised big money for the ALS Association of Texas. Give our listeners and viewers a little background on that before we get out of here.
Yeah, just real quick. I had no connection to ALS. I was excited to get on the board in 2013 after emceeing some walks and kept asking them what more I could do. And they told me I had to raise $1,500 and I had no idea how I was going to do it. And we started a golf tournament. In the first year, we raised $14,000 on a Monday. We went from 14 to 34 to 66 to 70. And when we got to 70, we said, what can we do more to grow this thing? And I had seen JDRF, type 1 diabetes, does a great job. And we had seen they did a Friday golf tournament and a Friday night party. We turned it into that, raised $154,000, COVID hit. So we kind of like backed off a little bit, but we still raised about that amount of money. And then this year, for our eighth year, we raised $260,000. So we've raised $925,000. Hopefully, if we, with God willing, we'll go over the $1 million mark next year in our ninth year. And I'm blessed to be a part of the ALS Association of Texas and fighting for our patients and fighting for research in the state of Texas.
Go fight the good fight. That's awesome, Bob. Man, we just love having you. Don't be a stranger anymore, okay?
Will do, guys. Always love chatting with you guys, and let's do it again soon.
Later, brother. What a great conversation with Bob Ballou. There's a reason why he's one of the most popular sports TV personalities in the state. Just dropping knowledge and giving us a great view of how he goes about his day-to-day, Duck.
Even if he did pick Texas, the one to pick
can't hold that against him.
Maybe
don't hold it against him.
Hey, let's hope he's right.
Let's hope he's right as we creep ever so close to that season opener against Louisiana Monroe. The next time you hear from us, we are going to be in preview mode, Duck, for the opener. And that's when all the fun starts. We're a week and some change from Louisiana Monroe, 2 weeks and some change from Alabama. It's getting fun, and we're going to be here to document it as we go along with some named guests just like Bob Ballou. That's going to do it for episode 269 of On Second Thought. For the Duck, Kirk Bowles, I'm Seth Golden. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Seth and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.